Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, shall we start? I'd like us to observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation. Shall we bow our heads? Thank you. I'd like to welcome and extend my greetings to the honorable members, to the support staff, the delegation from the Public Service Commission, and everyone present, including our esteemed guests. The main objective of this meeting is to receive and discuss the submissions by the Public Service Commission on the 2018 medium-term budget policy statement. So, indeed, I'm grateful that you're all here, and I am reliably informed that this presentation came on time and members received it. I want to believe that we are so prepared to interact with this presentation. As you would know, our main role is to solicit inputs and ideas from various stakeholders in order to take informed decisions on issues that affect the lives of the 57.7 million South Africans. And the PSC plays a critical role in assessing the quality of governance and management in the public sector. With these few words, I would like to invite you to really feel free and fully participate in this meeting so that we can achieve on the objective of the meeting. So let us then engage. Thank you very much. I will then move on to the next item, which is apologies.
Chairperson, honorable members and guests, we received two apologies from the members. The first one is from Mr. Sheikh Imam, who is attending the police committee, and then Mr. Shekotan is also attending another portfolio committee. Furthermore, National Treasury indicated that they will unfortunately not be able to send a representative from the budget office, but they will be sending somebody from the parliamentary office. That's it, Chair.
Okay, honorable members, these are the apologies. Do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed to item number 3, which is presentation by the Public Service Commission. Thank you very much for coming, and I would like to hand over to you, Mr. Tim.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Appropriation. Standing Committee on Appropriation, Ms. Poser. And I want also to appreciate the presence of the Honorable members of this important committee and the rest of the visitors which are here. With me, I am having Carmen Domingo Smart, who is a director in one of our branch, Monitoring and Evaluation, and I'm also accompanied by Ms. Nozi Magwaza, a parliamentary liaison officer. I want firstly to thank the the Select Committee for having invited us to comment on this important topic around the medium-term budget policy statement. And in particular, we appreciate the strategic issues which you have mentioned in your invite that points clearly that at the heart of it, it is effective implementation of the policy by those who are authorized to make it on behalf of the country, and in particular so that it can benefit, as Chairperson rightly pointed out, more than 55 million of the people who are looking forward to this legitimate government to improve their life for the best. I'm saying that because your whole, what you've been asked to comment upon, revolves around management and governance. Management has to do with actually translating policy into implementable strategies so that the intended outcomes should be realized. So that is very, very important. I want therefore to preface our presentation around the idea of effective implementation of policy. Well, the biggest challenge that we're having in the country, I'm sure all of us will agree, we've got very good policies. We've got one of the best constitutions, which is actually is underpinned by social, political, social, economic transformation. We've got a beautiful, you know, a plan for the country. I will call it a strategic plan for the whole country, the NDP. And we've not ended there. We've also translated the NDP into a manageable size to be implemented in a five-year phase, what you call a medium-term strategic framework to implement that policy. Now, last month, you got what you call a medium-term budget policy statement. It is a policy that needs to be implemented, and this policy is informed by recent developments, which means now our strategic framework has to be shifted a little bit so that now, because as you move forward towards 2030, there will be some detours, and these detours are necessitated by the fact that our economic growth is a bit having problems. We've got a challenge around the deficit. In short, there's no money. And therefore, we need it now. How do we navigate this? That's the context in which the medium-term strategic policy statement comes about. Now, what is therefore important for us from the PSC, and this is a framework which we think will assist the committee as they exercise their oversight to ensure that these policies and the money, which in particular this committee is entrusted upon to look into its appropriation, it does realize its intended outcomes. That is what we mean by effective implementation. Basically, effective implementation entails the following. Firstly, there must be a plan. There must be a plan. As I've said, we do have a plan, the medium-term strategy framework, which speaks to the National Development Plan. Now, given that now this is a medium-term strategy framework, what it entails and what it means is this, that firstly, next year, departments must begin to translate this policy statement into implementation. And then therefore the portfolio committee will be expect of, I mean the select committee, will expect the various departments actually to translate the statement, and this statement must be reflected into their annual performance plan, which will be brought to you sometimes early next year. What is critical even to be effective? This annual plan should actually speak to the policy. There must be an alignment between the APP with the policy to ensure that the desired outcomes are actually being realized. Desired outcomes that are informed by the social, economic policies around education, around health, infrastructure, around economic growth, or the stimulus whatsoever. We have to begin seeing these things, you know, in translating to that. Now, once it is that, then the next thing is that now the managers themselves have to have performance agreements which are aligned with the APP, which APP is also aligned with the strategic plan, that's NDP. Now, once now there's that alignment, the next point is that now there must be performance management, which entails that now on a regular basis, either quarterly or monthly, managers are able to monitor and see whether there is, whether this APP, annual management plan, are being infected. And if they are infected, are not infected, what are the interventions to be made? We don't have to wait until at the end of the year or at the end of 5 years, then we start complaining. The challenge is that there's no performance management. More often than not, we've got beautiful plans that are not being monitored regularly. And what is also interesting is this, that on a quarterly basis, departments are expected to present quarterly performance. Tomorrow, we'll be presenting to the Portfolio Committee on Public Administration and Training, our second term quarter. And we hope that the Portfolio Committee will look whether what we are presenting is in line with our APP, and our APP is in line with the strike plan. Because it is only when there is this alignment and the continuous assessment that we'll be able to ensure that we are being effective. So that is that. In short, all what I'm saying, we appreciate the fact that now your guidance in what we're going to present revolves around these matters. If there's a proper planning which involves now, you allocate resources, human resources, who is going to do what, and the money that is expected of them. That's number one. Once we've done that plan, and then now it is now we ensure that now there is a plan for the whole year, and then which then is being monitored. I think if these issues, you know, of financial management, human resources, proper planning, a timer's management, will be able to implement our policy effectively. We think that is the key challenge today. How do we implement the policy effectively? And what we're going to present here will revolve around that. And we hope that now we will be able to engage with our honorable members, and we hope that we will comment meaningfully so that at the end we are going to see effective management of this important policy which has been announced, which policy, if it is not implemented effectively, then we are not going to make any progress. And rightfully so, as I emphasize and appreciate very much, because more often than not, we forget why we're doing what we're doing. At the end and at the heart of everything, we want the lives of our people to improve. Management today is about, it's about getting results. It's about outcomes. It's not about people being busy, but there are no outcomes. So you hit the nail on the head. We want to improve the lives of our people by translating these policies into implementable programs. I thank you. At this point in time, I will request Carmen Domingo Swart to make the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those opening remarks. Over to you.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you so much, honorable members and guests. Thank you so much for this opportunity again, as my deputy has already indicated. It's always a privilege and a good challenge of the year for me to come and present to you guys and make sure that we address the issues that you've highlighted. As you will see and know already, we try and make sure that the issues that we present relate very directly to the mandate of the Public Service Commission. But also, we, based on the comments that we have received from the committee, try to make the connection between the finances and what we are saying in terms of our mandate. So the introduction in terms of the outline is just based on the exact issues that the committee has requested that we present on. looking basically at an introduction to some comments in terms of the overall medium-term budget policy statement as delivered, as well as looking at all the strategies available to significantly improve management practices within the public service. And then we will discuss the governance issues within the public service. We have then the expenditure versus the performance of the departments against the 2017-18 annual reports. And the detail of that is in Annexure 1, and we've just done a bit of an analysis just to show you and highlight some of our concerns in terms of the performance and the expenditure within some of the departments. And then opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money. Outline measures to ensure effective and efficient performance within the public service for the medium term. What we have used is basically the research and data available within the Public Service Commission. We've established a data warehouse to make sure that we better support this committee, to make sure that we have these data sets available to do more thorough analysis of it. So we have PAC data. We have also consulted with the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation. So areas that are important and we feel can add a little bit more value to our presentation, we've established a working relationship with them so that we can share that information in context of our mandate, as well as National Treasury, and there specifically it relates to the 30-day payment issues. I just want to highlight that in terms of the expenditure and performance information, there are three annual reports that are outstanding, and it is Cooperative Governance and Department of Energy and Environmental Affairs. I just want to highlight to the committee that we requested the annual reports, and we even worked through the portfolio committees here at Parliament to make sure that we get this information. And the delay in the annual report for Cooperative Governance and Energy is because of some challenges with the financial statements and some questions that were raised by the AG in relation to what the department has submitted. So that is mainly the reason for delay. The Environmental Affairs, and we'd like to highlight to the committee, this is the second time around that there has been a delay in the receipt of this annual report. So we have updated the previous year, which was 1670 for your convenience in Annexure A, but for the new financial year, that information is not available. I just felt it's important that we share that with the committee so that you understand what is in what these analyses are based on, so those departments are not there. We feel these departments are very important in relation to the economic stimulus recovery plan because they fall within the economic sector, within the social sector. And if they are seen as priority departments, I think it's very important that they take annual reporting serious so that we can really understand, as the DC has indicated, what is happening to the money that has been allocated to them, so that we can clearly understand the governance processes being effective in this department. So in terms of my introduction, it's very clear to see that the budget policy statement is based on the foundation of the National Development Plan, especially if you look at the three pillars that the Minister has highlighted. It is founded within the three key levers of the National Development Plan. So the main implementers in terms of improving public service and public administration. The three areas there is economic service, social service, as well as governance and administration. And when we look at the economic services, there was a lot of emphasis on the President's economic stimulus recovery program to address the low economic growth and the high unemployment rate within our country. And the examples that came out of the statement is in particular the emphasis on the infrastructure fund that the minister has highlighted, the issue of visa requirement regulations, although the PAC would like to just caution, the committee that there needs to be some balance in terms of some of the recommendations, and we will highlight it within our presentation of some of the statements that were made, in particular where the minister indicated that there will be 10-year multi-entry visas will be extended to several countries in for people that have got the skills that is required within our country. I think we need to be very clever in terms of what we are saying and how we actually going to do it, so that we don't end up with a lot of labor-related issues in terms of our South African labor force. Then also the whole issue of mining and agriculture. I think it's very important that we as the DC has indicated, that we clearly understand how we, on a practical level, are going to do what has been highlighted within the statement. Then, obviously, social services, something that has been emphasized within this policy statement over the last 5 years, is the issue of basic education, health, housing, social development. And then something that has come to the fore again is water and electricity and other basic services required to alleviate poverty within our country. Lastly is the governance and administrative lever that looks at the configuration or rebuilding the state, which goes back to, again, the emphasis of the National Development Plan in terms of building a capable and development-orientated state. And there our emphasis is, again, on making sure that we address the public wage bill, rooting out of corruption, and just finding the balance between the compliance and making sure that we build a capable state to deliver on the economic and social services. So we see the two first bullets as the tip of this triangle, and then governance and administration as the bottom part. So that is what we need to build these two services on, to make sure that we do due diligence to compliance, but also making sure what is practical in terms of delivering effective and efficient services. Okay. The next area that we're going to go in is basically the strategies available to significantly improve management practices within the public service. The four areas that we have highlighted is the areas that we have presented previously to the committee, and we've just built on some of our statements. The first one being planning. The second one, organizational performance management. The third one, human resource management. And then the fourth one being financial management. For us, these strategies are very, very important and will definitely improve what we are doing in the public service and address the challenges in public administration. In terms of the planning, we've reiterated to this committee before that detailed and integrated planning is very important across all spheres of government. And we feel that that is definitely the foundation for a successful implementation of the economic stimulus recovery plan. But for us, it's very important that there should be some support models in place. So support models for sector-specific service delivery approaches. And that is something that is new to our presentation, but we feel that we can't have a blanket approach to sectors. Every sector has got its own challenges, own experiences, and therefore we feel that those areas should definitely be taken into consideration. The emphasis should be on the collective responsibility at outcome level and clear alignment. We tend to focus so much on the output, but we don't look ultimately how the output is facilitating the achievement of our outcomes. And like the Deputy Chair has indicated, it is very important for us to keep track of, are we going to achieve the outcomes as planned within our 5-year framework. But somehow we seem to only focus on what is our outputs and not necessarily are these outputs taking us to the desired outcome. This requires better cooperation, coordination, collaboration amongst the departments within practical approaches and strategies. That is also something that we've emphasized, and for some reason we are not getting it right in our departments. There's no way that only one department can ensure that there's economic growth. There's no way that one department can ensure effective social development and social services. It is a joint collaboration that is required for us to be effective in these areas. And yet, we continuously work in our silos. We don't make the necessary trade-offs within the context of our economic climate where we don't have the money. And we can actually share in the responsibility and share also in the financial responsibility of ensuring that these services are delivered effectively. These integrated plans should emphasize also stronger state-owned entity oversight. It is definitely one of the areas that we've highlighted before to the committees in saying that we need to start taking this serious in terms of our oversight responsibility at national departments over these entities. And it's not just in line of the fact that we are dealing with the economic climate, but also to ensure that we hold people accountable. It goes back to the constitutional values and principles in terms of holding people accountable for the money that is being invested within these departments. So we're saying the emphasis is on stronger state-owned enterprise entities oversight and the alignment to better facilitate the achievement of development goals. These entities have enjoyed this autonomy for a long time, where they've been doing what they felt is important and not collectively driving the goals of government as a whole. So we feel that it's, especially in light of the economic stimulus recovery plan, it's very important that all hands are on deck in terms of achieving our development goals. Furthermore, government should work with the private sector in its planning, whereby creating a conducive environment for to stimulate the economic growth. There is a need for consistency in the development of plans and policies to reduce uncertainties, instability, which breeds the discomfort and the distrust between government and the society. This was also something that the minister emphasized in the NTBPS, that there is a distrust between society and the government. Because unfortunately, for some reason, as you will see in my next point, there are currently so many plans being developed at the various levels of government, but it's critical to understand that developing a plan can never be seen as a solution. And for some reason, the notion is that if we have a plan for it, we're going to be successful. There's more drive needed behind these plans. We need to understand, for example, if you are responsible for implementing service delivery, I need to understand what this new economic stimulus recovery plan requires for me in relation to the medium-term strategic framework. So what is going to drive what I put into my strategic plan? What is going to drive what I put into the priorities for my annual performance plan? And ultimately, what will cascade down into the departments? We emphasize continuously that there should be better coordination, better collaboration, alignment of plans. And it's for the last 5 years, the medium-term strategic framework was the vehicle that facilitated that better alignment. So what are we saying now in the light of a new plan? Are we going to continue with the framework as our foundation? Or are we going to use the economic stimulus recovery plan to now inform how we do our strategic plans and our annual performance plans? It's very important that we really get clarity on that level. The other thing is also, how is the work that was done in terms of Operation Pakisa? Because Operation Pakisa also looked at the different sectors that would create growth, economic growth within our country, that would make investors more comfortable in investing in our mining sector, in our at our borders. So what? How are these new plans going to align with our framework and with all the good work that has been happening as part of Operation Pakisa? It's very important that we make sure that the learning from these processes inform how we take the recovery plan forward. The next area that we strategy area that we feel is very important that we should consider is the operational performance management. There should be a better support system of better support systems in place for underperforming departments in sectors such as education, health, and social development to ensure effective performance in service delivery in light of the financial recovery plans as highlighted in the policy statement. You will see the detail of some of our concern of these departments in terms of how they are performing and the statement that the minister made that in, if a department is not going to perform, money will be taken and be used where it's mostly needed. But what are we going to do if the money that was prioritized is for those sectors that we feel is critical to develop for social development and economic growth within our country? Furthermore, this support should also address the uneven performance of implementing departments to ensure consistent service delivery to all our citizens. For example, if we have the Department of Health, we need to ensure that the level of services, and that's just an example, I'm not picking on the department, it's just to ensure that services are rendered on the same level in all provinces. There's a lot of unevenness in terms of how we are performing, and as the National Department of Health, it is our responsibility to ensure that there is support in terms of making sure that there's consistency across the board in all provincial Department of Health, education, as well as social development. And I'm just using them as example because it is the emphasis of the policy budget statement. There is a need for reflection on the organizational performance against strategic plans to clearly show achievement of strategic outcomes. I've already indicated why that is important. And this would mean that we really need to think of how are we going to report on performance. This has implications for our annual reports, and we really need to think what is going to add value to a committee such as yours, to the portfolio committees, in terms of the oversight role. What do you want to know? How many reports have been developed or produced, or what is the impact of those reports in terms of the mandate of that specific department? This could be facilitated through better alignment between the planning and performance management systems. Better alignment will also create opportunities to find balance between organizational performance against performance rewards. This is also an area of concern, which you will see later in our presentation. There is a disjuncture between awarding of performance bonuses and the achievements of the department. Then the next one is human resource management. There is a need for human resource management processes to focus on measuring itself against the outcome of getting the right person for the job. I'd like to repeat that, to get the right person for the job, and employee conduct, values, and performance instead of merely compliance. We know that it is a very highly regulated area within public administration, HR management, but we need to start focusing on, are we, through these processes, getting the right people at the right level to do the job that is required? Because we have seen before, and which we have presented to this committee before, the number of consultants that we use in relation to the cost for these consultants, where they are basically doing things that people are employed to do, especially if you look at governance issues, where we are paying consultants to do project management, we are paying consultants to do financial management, we are paying consultants to do contract management, and then we have a CFO and we've got a whole contingency in terms of senior management officials who have been appointed to do it, and yet we spend millions of rands on recruiting consultants. In light of the reducing the structural deficit in the public sector wage bill, the focus should be on right-sizing of government. Again, we would like to emphasize that we don't support a blanket approach when it comes to this. We feel that there's, as the minister in the policy statement also emphasized, we need to make evidence-based, research-informed decisions. And therefore, we feel it's very important that we have detailed work studies to make evidence-based, informed decisions that takes into consideration the various factors as it relates to the specific sectors and forecasting. So it's not just we have to think of how we're going to save money now, but we need to understand the impact that our decisions will have on service delivery and the performance of departments. Ensuring gainfully employed workforce. For example, when we look at the statement also, the minister highlighted that the immediate reprioritization of 350 million to recruit in an excess of 2,000 health professionals within the public health facilities. We have the Department of Health that in the latest compensation review done by National Treasury saw that the department is the fastest growing sector in terms of the number of personnel, and yet there is a shortage on the ground. So the question is, what are we doing wrong? Are we employing the right people? Because we already have a sector that is seen as, and I would like to use inverted commas, as a bloated sector, and yet we are investing another 350 million to get more feet on the ground. So we need to make sure that people that are employed are gainfully employed, as emphasized by the minister. We also have the reskilling and retraining of officials to do more. So making sure that, yes, you are employed to do a certain area, but if another area arises, that we provide the necessary training and upskilling of officials to do a little bit more, because sometimes what is required is something 10% more work, and yet we employ a totally new official to do the 10% instead of upskilling one person to do the 10%. So those are some of the areas that we really need to think about that will inform how we deal with the wage bill issue. And this is where I would like to highlight the concern, or caution rather, in terms of the visas for people with skills to work in South Africa. I think it's very, very important that if a decision is made that we will use skills from outside of our country, that we've continuously said is that skills transfer. We've said it even with the use of consultants, that we should not be over-reliant on consultants, because consultants come in, they do a job, they leave, but nobody knows how to continue with that job that that person has been doing for a year or a year and a half, and then we have to go back to that consultant a year or a year and a half after that so that they can continue to with that work, instead of making sure that people within the department are equipped and have the capacity to continue with that process. So we really need to think of how we're going to ensure the transfer of skills, if that is the approach that we as a country would want to follow. And like I said, that is opening a can of worms as far as labor relations issues are concerned, and we need to be very aware of that and very sensitive in terms of how we definitely approach that. Building a workforce that is versatile, adaptive, and flexible, so making sure that the people we employ in the public service are flexible, so that the focus is continuously on addressing the need and being responsive to the need of the people of South Africa that we serve. In terms of HR management, we continue. Furthermore, in terms of the wage bill, it is not only about the number of officials, but it's about the salaries being paid out, the special notches, the above inflation rate increases, the above inflation cost of living increases that we need to look at. Unfortunately, honourable members and Madam Chair, we do not have the detail of research that has been done, but I'm sure if the committee approaches National Treasury, DPSA, and DPME, they can provide a much in-depth picture to the committee in terms of trying to understand the money in relation to the number, the special notches. Like I said, the investigations of some officials receiving above inflation or even above percentage that has been agreed in terms of cost of living increases within the public service. So there's more work to be done in this area for us to really understand what are the underlying causal factors for this wage bill. And I think it's also, we were addressing an issue when it came to the occupational specific dispensation, but we feel as a commission it's time for us to really look at our approach and the methodology used to address these issues of specialized skills. We've had a blanket approach of increasing all salaries and having a separate salary structure for these OSDs. We've addressed it. Shouldn't we now make sure that we try and stabilize this area and really see what are the scarce skills and deal with that in a different way? Because the OSD approach can't be used just to deal with the scarce skills. We really need to now be very creative in terms of how we take this further. And again, this is an area that we can closely, the committee can definitely ask DPSA to give us more detail in terms of really understanding, you know, the impact of OSD on the public wage bill. So for us, it is really it's a maze at the moment, and one needs to really understand where all these little corners are and what we need to address in this maze. The last point is this: it's critical that managers should manage, and in particular deal with management of poor performance. Managers are very afraid to deal with poor performance because they feel it says something about that, about them. I can't score somebody a 2 or a 1, and then I've bargained on receiving a performance bonus. So I'm scoring myself a 4 and a 3. So if people that are reporting to me are scoring a 2, it means that I'm not doing something right. So I think it's just performance management is a very, very tricky area, governance area within government. And if we are going to continue with the system that we have in place, we need to make sure that we have better support systems in terms of making sure that this system is more effective and is really dealing with the management issues that is so poorly managed within government. The next area is financial management. The financial planning and management model should ensure that service delivery departments clearly shows the cascading of their budget to the different levels, from national to the district or ward level. We continuously emphasize the importance of cascading the medium-term strategic framework into strategic plans, into annual performance plans, and ultimately into individual performance plans. But what about the money? Are we making sure that the money is similarly cascaded as we focus on strategic objectives? Are we showing how we're going to spend the money properly, you know, projecting much better in terms of the financial management processes? To present Treasury with options requires good planning and financial modeling capabilities that are mostly absent in the public service. This is definitely a skills area that is a major gap within our government departments. The capacity does exist in is mostly limited to Treasury and institutions like the Financial and Fiscal Commission. We really need an intervention within government to upskill our officials within our financial departments, and not just MMS level, because the assumption is always when we talk about training and upskilling, it is that we need to upskill lower level 2 to 12. But the reality is, in some cases, we even need to upskill some of our senior management officials to make sure that they clearly understand their responsibility and obligation when it comes to financial planning and modeling within their department. This goes hand in hand with creating the capacity in terms of supply chain management, contract management, and procurement. These remain challenges within our departments and has a major financial implication for us as the state. If these financial competencies are not developed, departments such as health will most probably find it difficult to deliver on the prioritized 150 million to procure the beds and linens. So there's a lot of statements that have been made by the minister, and it needs financial capacity in order to make sure that it's efficient and effective. For us, that is very, very important. We have, as the Public Service Commission, conducted various inspections in Department of Health, Department of Education, and we've seen how these challenges with procurement and supply chain management has impacted on the performance of these departments as well as service delivery. So it's very important that we deal with these issues. And I mean, it's not something that is new and that we've not previously communicated with the committee members. It is something that has been coming along, if not the last 3 but 5 years, in terms of what is critical for building capacity within our government department. Sorry.
Okay, Ms. Swart, if I may come in. I know we've got another meeting at 11. So if you can, in your presentation, focus on those key or critical areas so that you can allow members sufficient time to interrogate your presentation.
Okay, no problem. No problem, ma'am. Okay, the governance issues are the issues that we have been presenting to the committee in terms of our data warehouse, in terms of data that we have available. I think I won't go through what the areas are. I will just present it as we go along. In terms of the performance management, which is slide 10, we just want to highlight that for the last 4 financial years, there has been a steady increase in the submission in terms of performance agreements from a 69% in 2015-16 with a notable increase of 83% in the 2018-19 financial year. Technically, this should be 100% because the performance agreement of an HOD or a DG is very important for the organizational performance, and that's how we manage the organizational performance much better. We had 36 DGs that were eligible for performance assessment. However, only 30 of these DGs submitted their performance agreements on time, and we had one newly appointed DG in the Department of Correctional Services. The departments that did not submit their performance agreements for 2018-19 on time is the 4 that we've highlighted there, and the reason that the Department of Defense is in red is that they've been consecutively not been submitting their performance agreement on time. Which is a concern for us. I think one thing that we want to highlight is that we need to start tracking better in terms of the DGs that are not submitting the performance agreements on time. We need to make sure that there's some way that we are tracking whether they are receiving a cost of living increase. Because if we look at the DPSA circular of the 9th of June 2015, it says that if you have not submitted your performance agreement on time, you automatically are disqualified for receiving a notch or a notch increase. So even if your performance was good, that is something, because it has financial implications, and I think it's something that's not being properly managed at the moment, so we need to make sure that we understand how that is managed.
The other thing that we would like to highlight is also there's been an increase in the number of acting DGs. Last year there were 11 acting DGs, and this year there is 14. Please, my apologies for I saw after that we submitted the presentation. It says that for 2018-17, it should be 2018-19. There is an increase of 14 acting DGs out of 51 against 11 in 2017-18. My apologies for that error. The other thing that we would just like to highlight there is that we have seen the repeat departments that have had acting DGs for the last 2 years, and we've included as a note in the presentation, because we didn't want it to be too busy for you guys, so it is part of the presentation. The departments that have had acting DGs for the last 2 years is Department of Education, Economic Development, GCIS, Military Veterans, Mineral Resources, Rural Development, Social Development, and Transport. So 8 out of the 14 have had DGs for the last 2 years, which is a concern, and we would like, you know, it creates instability in terms of leadership. It has an impact on how we make decisions and how we make sure that things happen within the department. The next slide basically just looks at the performance reviews of the HODs or the DGs, and just giving an indication of how many of them actually submitted their performance agreement, how many of them were actually assessed, how many of them performance were actually assessed. The information is clear, and in the interest of time through you, Madam Chair, I will continue unless and when it's questions and answer time, we will deal with any question that relates to that slide. The next issue is the financial disclosure framework. There has been a decline in the submission of the framework forms from senior managers. It is a notable decline. It's not so significant, but ultimately the expectation is that there should be 100% compliance in this area. And this also helps us deal with making sure that public officials are not doing business with the state. So this is a very important monitoring tool for us as the state to making sure that people comply with that, and also so that we can deal with unethical issues that maybe creep up. We've also just, the next slide just unpacks the first slide a little bit more, just to show the number of SMS members we have, the number that have submitted, and basically what is outstanding. And then you will see the table that we have there. We say that out of the 13 departments that submitted, between 83 to 99%, the following departments submitted a 0%. Which means none of the senior managers within their department submitted their disclosure forms on time to the Public Service Commission. And there we have Department of Defense and Department of Energy. And as you can imagine, those are the departments that we would really make sure that we manage business with the state. The next slide just gives you a picture of the heads of department in terms of their submission, and we would really like the committee to take note that where the obstacles or the challenge, the delay in the process is, because HODs say that they submitted to their EAs, and unfortunately in most cases out of the 10 departments listed there, in most cases the PAC has not received the disclosure form. So oversight and management of financial disclosures facilitates transparency on the financial interests, and in particular those entrusted with managing of public funds. So it's very, very important. The effective monitoring of non-compliance closes the loopholes or the gaps for misconduct and financial leakages within the public sector. The EAs must hold all defaulting HODs accountable for failure to comply, as this breeds a culture of impunity. Parliament should hold all defaulting EAs accountable for failure to comply,
as this cracks the foundation for the trust between government and society. If I'm going to fast, Madam Chair, through you, financial misconduct, there has been a significant reduction in the on the completion of disciplinary proceedings on financial misconduct cases, as reported in 2017-18. You can see from 756 cases that were finalized in 16-17, we've only finalized 387 cases, which is a significant reduction. And we are quite concerned as the Commission, and we wanted to make sure that we clearly understand what is the reasons behind it. And some of the reasons provided by the departments is pending appointment of judges, pending finalization of hearings. And there's a lot of waiting for this and waiting for a process to start or waiting for a process to be completed or waiting for somebody to be appointed or availability. The challenges can be attributed to the lack of prioritization and the required capacity within the department to effectively deal with these cases. The next slide is just an indication of the costs related to these cases. I won't go through it in detail, but just to highlight the three departments that, in terms of financial misconduct, the departments where the amounts not received were over 500K, which is Department of Defense, Labor, and Public Works. And the reason we would like to just emphasize this is, especially Department of Public Works, is one of the, it's a key role player when it comes to the infrastructure program. So it's very important that we can, we need to understand what is happening there and why are those reasons for not retrieving the required money. The next slide, two slides, is then focused on the payment of invoices. Invoices older than 30 days and not paid for the last 5 months. So it's basically in terms of the financial year from April until August. And although there is some decline in the numbers, overall there has been an increase in the costs related to these invoices that have not been paid. And that delay in payment has major financial impact, as we all know. This could be attributed to the poor financial management, as alluded to earlier in the presentation. And these poor financial management processes relate specifically to the supply chain management and procurement, contract management practices, and project management in terms of incorrect projections made. And underlying this could be just pure corruption. The next slide just basically shows the departments that are the main transgressors in terms of high cost of invoices not paid. And again, you can see the concern is that these departments are vital role players in the economic sector. And with the planned injection of additional funds, it is essential to ensure effective financial management. So this is just going to get worse in terms of the prioritization as stated in the budget policy statement. These are the departments that are going to get more money. They're going to be prioritized, and we are putting money into a system that is not effective at the moment. And that is the emphasis that the Commission would like to make, that we need to really understand the financial challenges within these departments. We've highlighted also in slide 22 precautionary suspensions, and 2017-18 reflects a notable decline in the number of people suspended and a reduction in the number of people whose suspensions exceeded 30 days, although it is still high. It's something that we should continuously keep our eyes on, but there is some improvement in the area. The next three slides are based on the information as provided in Annex A in terms of performance versus expenditure. And we show on slide 23 the top 10 lowest performing departments for 2017-18 in respect to the achievement of their planned targets.
And there you can see we start with military veterans at achievement of plan targets of 22.2%. Water and sanitation, 40.9%. Public works, the presidency, women, rural development, human settlements. If you just look at the ones that are below 60%, those are the prioritized departments as far as this policy budget statement is concerned, where we're going to put more money, we're going to be put more people in. So, and yet, these departments are not performing. So what are we going to do to ensure that these departments have got the relevant support to get out of the situation that they're in now to effectively use the reprioritization of money for the next financial year? The question is the state going to reprioritize the funds for these departments due to their underperformance? Are we going to give it in the beginning of the financial year and at the end of the second quarter just take the money again so that the money can actually be spent and give it to departments who are actually spending their budgets? The next one is in relation to departments that are underspending, the 2% below. So because the norm is 98%, I'm not going to go through in detail. If there is a question, we can definitely deal with it. The important slide for us is slide 25, which there has been a notable decline in the performance for 2017-18, with the following noteworthy declines detected in the overall performance of the department. And we, again, you can see there with military veterans, that had about 60.9% achievement in 16-17 and with a very alarming 22.2% in terms of the latest financial year. We also have, I'm just going to pick a few of these departments, no specific reason, just to highlight the performance. We have Public Works, which as we previously presented to the committee, our concerns have been highlighted, which that is on a downward trend in terms of their performance, rural development as well, the presidency, and then the last one, which is a big concern because of the emphasis in the speech by the minister of the water projects and the money that will be invested in there and the way that we're going to manage that at national level is very important because from a 51.3% in 2016-17, the department achieved a 40.9%. The one slide that is new for us and we would like to bring to your attention is we looked at these departments and we just checked in terms of SMS members, how the department paid our performance rewards and if there were some payments to these SMS members who are responsible for the achievement of the plan targets. And I'm not going to go through the detail of the table, but I would like to bring your attention to the bullet under the table to show you that in the case of the Department of Water and Sanitation, that 18.2% in terms of performance rewards received by the SMS members amounted to 3 million rand. So if you look at the percentage, it doesn't look that bad, but when you look at the money, then it's definitely an area for concern. Public Works, the 26.7% amounted to 1.5 million. Human Settlements, the 29.5% amounted to 1.9 million. Rural Development, the 22.3% amounted to 4.1 million. So if we are rewarding the senior managers that are not contributing to the achievement of the performance targets of the department, what are we basing our performance reviews on? What are these managers being assessed against? Okay. The other area that is part of the presentation as requested by the committee is the opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money. And again, we've highlighted the usage of consultants, so the number of consultants versus the cost. And I'm not going to go through it in detail, but the one thing that is very concerning for us is that some departments are just not fully reporting. They're not reporting completely in terms of the numbers,
and the money. And in some cases, they don't put the total. So we, as the committee knows, we do this manually. So we literally go and calculate these figures that we have in front of you. So, like, for example, Department of Rural Development, they report the cost, but they don't report the number of consultants. Department of Tourism, they report the cost, and again, not the number of consultants. So just to try and understand why we are using these consultants, we've just picked three of the departments just to get a sense of what we're using these consultants for. And the three top departments is Rural Development. And you will see that the department spends 365 million rand on a consultant for project management. 94.1 million on research and advisory services. 13.5 million on financial management, which is a very big concern. And 8.2 million on organizational management. So again, the question that we would like to ask is, what is the CFO doing? What is the the DG or the HOD doing in relation to these things? Because this is nothing new. We've been paying consultants for contract management, for project management, for research. Then we've got for developing strategies. We've got our strategic management officers, we've got our monitoring and evaluation of a component created in the department that is costing us money, and yet they are not gainfully employed by the look on where we are spending our money. I'm not going to go through the detail of the rest. We've highlighted the areas in bold just to give you an indication of what the money was being spent on. And we say, based on the above examples, most of these consultants are utilized for governance issues. And as I said, I've highlighted these areas. These departments have a key role towards the economic stimulus recovery plan. And based on this information, it seems like they don't have the competencies in the above mentioned areas. So it's very alarming, and I think it's something that we need to take note of. Then we go to cost-cutting measures. We say that we acknowledge that cost-cutting measures are here to stay. However, there can not be a blanket approach to cost-cutting measures, and particularly as it relates to service delivery departments such as education, social development, and health. I know the general approach is also to cut support services instead of the core, but the reality is if you take the whole issue of cutting the support services, you will have a hospital that has got poor infrastructure because we are not maintaining it, because we've cut cleaners and maintenance so that we can have funds available for the, what is seen as the core business. If we take away support services for schools, we take away from the productive learning time, because now teachers have to be used to fill those support services or administrative requirements in terms of governance within the department. The PAC has got a range of inspection reports, and we, if so requested by the committee, we can make it all available to the committee members. Just to give you an indication of what the impact thus far has been on the blanket approach of just cutting costs across the board and not taking into consideration the effect that it will have on a specific sector. Reconfiguration of state-owned entities as well as the reorganization of departments. It is essential that a full audit be conducted to inform the decision-making of the reconfiguration of SOEs and the reorganization of departments, with the option of merging some of these entities and some of the departments, because we, as committee members, as you, the honorable committee members would know, some of these SOEs were born out of a department. It was a chief directorate, it was a branch, and a decision was made for it to be an entity on itself. And in the bigger scheme of things, shouldn't we now have a full audit to really understand we've allowed some time? We can do an impact evaluation, try and understand, you know, what is the impact of this approach and make different decisions. This, if in most cases the SOEs were branches within departments or divisions within entities,
Now we need to make the tough decision in terms of has this work or not. This will reduce the operational costs as they will no longer have overhead costs in terms of building leases, administrative stuff, because you will have it as a component within the department. The poor oversight of SOEs is an area that we can no longer afford to neglect. There is a need to capacitate government to oversee and ensure that SOEs are delivering. Establishment of commissions. Government should review the decisions of establishing various commissions where the mandate of these commissions overlap or duplicate mandates of those of state institutions supporting the constitutional democracy. That's just one area that we would like to bring to the attention of the committee. And also because the minister spoke about the importance of partnerships, we just wanted to reiterate PAC's opinion about the triple P's and cautions the committee members that we need to just make sure that we have a balance in terms of these partnerships, between utilizing partnerships and to deliver on the mandate of the state and building a capable state. I'm not going to go through that in detail because it is something that we've previously presented, but we wanted to emphasize that there should be a balance and we need to understand the operational and maintenance impact that this approach had and will continue to have if we don't change our approach in terms of how we're going to utilize these partnerships. Tough times require tough decisions. Is it not time for government to place some national departments under administration? Yes, the Constitution talks about putting provincial departments under administration. How long is the state going to ignore the non-performing departments such as military veterans and water and sanitation? Placing these departments under administration will mean the deployment of necessary experts to ensure quick and effective resolution of critical matters within the sector. Furthermore, this also means tough questions such as the bailouts, are the bailouts a solution or an enabler? Poor governance and corruption are threatening the economic viability of the state and threatening the image of government. PAC is of the view that the recruitment model, the appointment of board members, selection of the chief executive and chief financial officers, and the remuneration framework of the SOEs should be reviewed. Because the example that we would like to use is in some cases, some of these CFOs and CEOs of these entities have higher salaries than the HODs and DGs within these departments that are overseeing it, and yet we have the bailouts of these exact SOEs. So we need to find a balance in terms of how we are going about this. Our closing remarks, the last bullet there is PAC recommends a hybrid approach which should be followed similar to the one recommended in the National Development Plan for HODs. Our closing remarks are, having shared all the above information, at the heart of this is the extent to which all of us help to embed the constitutional values and the principles, as these are the foundations for effective, efficient, and economic use of resources in the state. If we comply with the constitutional values and principles, for example, one being professional ethics, dealing with those issues is very important. Accountability, ensuring that people within these positions are accountable. And the other principle that looks at the transparency, showing how the budget was spent on service delivery and how many people actually benefit from this budget that has been allocated. Budgets should be translated into responses for dealing to the needs of people and improving the lives of the citizens. So this information is given to ensure that budget processes is a means to an end. This end is the quality of life and making sure that every cent is used to improve the quality of the lives of all. In closing, it is vital that this committee should work closely with the Economic and Social Cluster Portfolio Committees to ensure the effective, efficient, and economic use of resources to deliver against government mandates. Thank you.
Well, starting from the opening remarks and going to this, I must say that this is really an insightful presentation, and it has given us,
you know, sufficient information to consider in our work. But then, honourable members, you were listening attentively. I'm now going to open the floor for interrogation of this presentation. But before that, we have two options. The one option is, as we engage, maybe we finish before 11. And 10 to 11, I'd like to release you to go to the president's meeting. The other option is we continue and we pause, go to the president's meeting, then we come back and conclude our work. So which one would be the best for the honorable members? Or shall we say we will cross the river? Come again? You may respond. Yes?
I'm not clear about coming back. When are we going to finish this? Are we sure?
I'm giving you two options. You must then say what, because I also don't know.
Okay,
so I can't
if we don't know, let's not presume. Maybe the meeting is going to be an hour. We don't know, all of us. I would suggest that we finish the meeting at
okay.
that time.
All right. Honourable Member Martin?
Proposal to conclude by 10 to 11.
Okay. Honourable McLaughlin?
I will ask the other members, ma'am. I don't have to attend any meeting at 11 o'clock. So
you are covered. Okay, thank you very much.
Shall we then engage, but in our engagement,
so that we can be released at 10 to 11. Shouldn't be late for the president's meeting. All right. Let's start with me confining members to only three questions. Then we'll be given a second round if we have time. All right. Over to you. Short and to the point.
Honourable Member McCarthy, Honourable Member Sumayana, Honourable Member Manana, and that's our Honourable Member Alana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having been limited to three questions, I'll try and do the best I can with that. On slide 6, right at the bottom, you give us a number of personnel in health from 242,000 to 307,000. Can you possibly give us a breakdown of those numbers? Do we know what they comprise of? How many nurses, how many doctors, administrators, etc.? Is it possible to get that through? I think that would help us. Then if I could go to slide... a question of clarity. Maybe I misunderstood what was being said. On slide 11, the first bullet point, you say of the 36 eligible DGs, 30 DGs submitted on time, with one newly appointed DG in the department. And then you say the four departments that did not submit by the due date. The arithmetic's not adding up to me. Maybe you could just explain. Because 36 less 30 is 6, and then there's one other which leaves 5, and then there's 4. And I wasn't quite sure, is the newly appointed DG included or not included, and why are we only given 4, not the outstanding 5, then, just if you wouldn't mind. And then also just to find out, have you conducted any kind of study yourselves as to whether or not this automatic disqualification for notch increase is actually being affected? And also on the same page, 11, it is below the table. That note on the 9 June 2015 DPSA circular. I just wondered whether you actually conducted any study to see is that being applied or isn't it, or is it just your suggestion that it must be applied? And then lastly, if I'm sure. Is that my 3 up, ma'am? If so, I'll put an end to it there. It's fine. Can I have a last one? Okay. And then just slide 16. It's referring to what went before as well, but I have a huge problem here that it seems that the slip-up might be in the area of the executive authority, because the departments seem to be trying to comply in many instances, and then it grinds to a halt in the executive authority. Do you have any suggestions to how we can sort that out? Because that's unacceptable. So the departments are doing their best. They submit everything they need to the executive authority, and then the executive authority dumps them in the cart by not following through. Are the ministers at fault? Must we go to the ministers and say, guys, you're not performing, you're not doing your job? That's my question. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, PSC, for the presentation. I would like to just start with a general comment, starting by just saying that I'm not certain what the brief was, because I was actually expecting that you would be focusing on the division of revenue and maybe appropriations in terms of the MTPPF. When you started, with the introduction, you know, I thought you raised very important things, even though you've deprived us of them on paper. Here, you raised some very important which relate to the MTPPS, and I thought that was important detail. And I would have expected that then you would give us this information, and then comment on the PSC's view. On those things, which is why I'm saying that I'm not sure about the brief that you got for us, because I think for us what we're interested in is the, you know, is actually the allocation, the midterm allocation, because it is the midterm allocation of funds. It's not like the budget at the beginning of the year, but it's midterm where there's lots of adjustments and reprioritization and reallocation of available funds. So. But in spite of that, I just want to check some of the statements. Okay, one of the things is that the implementation of this economic stimulus recovery plan, and you've raised a number of things. What is your actual take, just in a short sentence? What do you think about this stimulus? And then the other thing is the issue of, you said that the plans and policies to reduce uncertainties and to actually reduce the discomfort and distrust between government and society. The current status of our public participation, do you believe that public participation is not adequate? The other thing you said, the third thing, you said that in terms of planning, you said the government should work with the private sector in its planning. Can you just speak to that as to what it means to be planning with the public sector? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. But when you address us, ma'am, you call us guys. I didn't know you heard yourself when I say, you know what, guys? No. Let me go to the presentation. We have indicated that we have made an investigation with regards to health and education on slide 8. Can we have that report so that we can familiarize with it ourselves? And you raise a very important issue, and you even said no note, especially the money that is going to buy the linen or to purchase the linen. What is your view with regards to this? How can we help the Department of Health? You know, I've been talking to the chairperson this morning when we were on our way here. I was shocked at the situation at Whitburn Hospital. A patient, they don't have linen there. and I was raising this issue very sharply. I want to concur with you that the system that is there as of now, when we are giving this money to them, are they going to be in a position to do the right thing? We need to raise this issue very sharply, because the very same people who were given money to do this, they failed dismally, and now we are adding money on top of that. Chairperson, with regards to the veteran right, it seems that there is corruption of some sort. You know, if you collate the money that is spent and the target, it's a clear indication that is something that is not going well. Well, with regards to the DGs and the HODs, it's a long, long story. It seems as if we are failing. This is my resource. Thank you very much.
Hello, Member Slovakia. Thank you.
Let me ask a start with a general question on the MTPPF, and I base this question on the on health. That, in your view, would you say that there are in the course of reprioritization, there are budget shifts whose unintended consequences have not been considered? Example is the possibility that the NHI might not be implemented as per the plan, and the Minister of Health has pointed to that direction because of the budget shifts and cuts and so on. It is one example. There could be a couple of others if you have had a look at that. I raise this question, Jefferson, as well, because this committee does have a mandate and a responsibility to consider that as well. When you think of the mandate to the mandate to shift budget, I forget the correct term. The mandate of this committee to propose something different from what is on the table, and in fact to effect, like we did with the 100 million rand from Treasury to Home Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, budget amendment. Yes, you're correct. I raised that question in view of that as well. The second question is on slide 7, where you make reference to right sizing. Last week, a proposal was made, which some of us felt uncomfortable with a bit. A proposal was made that the issue of the wage bill must just be left to or managed through natural attrition. Natural attrition. And some of us were a bit uncomfortable because the effect thereof, the unintended consequences thereof, would be a loss of critical staff, at management level. It could be loss of the of staff at the frontline service delivery personnel. So that kind of just simply leaving it to natural attrition is a bit, some of us were uncomfortable with because of that. We thought that even if that happened, but it must, if natural attrition was used as part of managing the wage bill, it could not be just wholesale. It has to be considered. That's the second. The third and last one. If you could, on slide 8, if you could explain, you make a very important point there about cascading, departments ensuring that budgets are cascaded down to sub-national level. If you could explain that a little further, because it implies to me that you are proposing that just equitable share and grants are not enough to suggest that yes, we have given you money and that's it, see to finish. Is there something else that you are actually proposing that suggests this cascading of budgets down to the lower levels government from national maybe just equitable share and leave it at that is not enough, something else a bit tighter and a bit focused is required. Maybe that's what you that's why I'm saying please explain that. Let me stop there, Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much for your intervention. I would like to ask a question on your quarterly performance report. Is it possible that you can enter into a working relationship between ourselves so that as you go and present to the portfolio committee, you just also forward us your report on a quarterly basis? How feasible is that? But also, on the 2018 MTBPS and the NDP goals, how would you, as PSC, rate the MTBPS against the NDP goals, which the government hopes to achieve by 2030? And to what extent do the proposals contained in the MTBPS accommodate the most vulnerable sectors, such as women, children, rural communities and people living with disabilities? Now, on the issues of planning, coordination and performance, in your view, would you say government departments and entities have shown any sign of improvement over the past 5 years with respect to ensuring better coordination and alignment activities? Also, in the main, all these problems that we're talking about, to me, they are pointing at inefficiency. All of them, including your SOEs. How do you see us making an impact in this area of the budget being used efficiently, effectively, and economically? Because all of those issues are pointing at efficiency, all of them. Your SOE's problems, your poor performance, inefficiency, submission of your management agreements, inefficiency. So how do you, because we've been talking about it, and every time we talk about inefficiency, ineffectiveness, or let me say efficacy, of budget implementation,
programs and budget implementation. If you can, just how do you see us turning that around as this committee, making an impact just over efficiency and inefficiency of, government performance? Thanks. Over to you.
And then in your responses, also it could be straight on the short end of the time, by 10 of the left with 5, 10, 15, 15 minutes, and I can use the member to work there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My humble apologies, committee members. I apologize for my incorrect address. Please accept my apologies. Thank you so much. Just in terms of the breakdown for Department of Health, Honourable Member, as I've indicated, unfortunately, this is not research that we have done. We just felt it's very important to highlight to the committee that this is research that was done by National Treasury with the support of DPSA. So they will be able to give you the breakdown in terms of, you know, where these numbers actually reside. In terms of the increase of numbers. In terms of slide 11, in terms of that automatic disqualification, this is something that we picked up when we were doing the presentation, and nobody's really checking whether that is happening, and that's why we felt that it's important that something that should be raised. PSE has not specifically looked at it, but it's definitely something that we felt is important to bring to the attention of the committee and the committee members as something that obviously needs to be dealt with. I think the other issue that the Honourable Member raised in terms of a slip-up in terms of the financial disclosures as well as the performance agreements, I'm checking some of these performance agreements. Some of them have been submitted, and I think that's where the whole confusion with the numbers are coming in, because some of them are submitted and signed by the HOD or the DG, but then not signed by the minister, and then it's still submitted. So it is scrambling the data. I will ensure that we double-check so that next time we'll report even what has been signed by the DG versus what was not signed by the minister. And I think it just goes back to the constitutional value, which is constitutional value 6, which is about accountability. And I think your example in terms of making sure that people are called to task is very, very important. And I think this committee is a good place to start of holding people accountable, especially when there's financial implications, and calling people to say that. What is the reasoning behind this, and what are the obstacles in terms of basically achieving these areas? Honourable Member, this is the brief that we've been given in terms of the areas that we needed to focus on. And what we try to do, and I hope that you've seen it, is that we've tried to make direct links with things that we present versus what is in the policy statement, and try to make that connection. And that's why we focused on those departments and highlight the performance and how they are achieving against these governance issues, those departments that reside within the economic and the social sector, because a lot of work still needs to be done, because the allocation is made, as you your good self has already indicated, but we are saying that if the decision is that is the allocation, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to put processes and systems in place. And that is our recommendation from the PSC side, is that there should be proper processes in place to support these departments to make sure that the money that is allocated is efficiently, effectively utilized. And I think the other recommendation also is the fact that they need to show how this money is being spent. So they shouldn't just say, we had an imbezo, but what is the impact of that imbezo? They shouldn't just develop a report, but what is the impact on the findings within that report? So those are some of the recommendations that we have made. You, Honourable Member, you also request a comment over all of the stimulus plan. And I think in my introduction and in the presentation, in that area where we are talking about planning, We highlight the importance of learning from other plans as well. I think my deputy chairperson indicated that, you know, we've got the medium-term strategic framework, we've got the national development plan, now we've got the stimulus plan. The question for us is, how do these plans actually complement each other? Where are the duplications? Even the mention of Operation Pakisa. There's a lot of good work that emanated from that process, and it was also sector focused. So our concern is a lot of work and a lot of investment has gone into those processes. How did those processes contribute to the economy, contributed to social development, contributed to the infrastructure within our country? And we must focus on the learning that came from those processes and not just skip over to the new plan. We really need to understand what has worked in the previous programs that we have in place so that we can have a successful recovery plan in terms of that. In terms of the current status of public participation, we are in the process, Honourable Member, of doing evaluation of 100 departments against the 9 principles under Section 195 of the Constitution, which is our mandate. And the principle number 7 looks at the public participation. And this has become a very compliance-driven area because if I've got a guideline, if I've got a policy, it looks like I'm consulting. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of cascading what all our initiatives are saying and how that it feeds into our interventions and into our programs. So that's the area in terms of public participation. In terms of having policies and guidelines, there are a lot of paper in place, but how it is actually impacting on ground level, that's the gap within our processes currently. Work with the private sector for planning. For us, I think the emphasis here is there's a lot of programs being implemented by the private sector, which is more or less in line with some of the intervention that we have as government also have. So instead of working away from each other, that coordination is very important. And some trade-offs as well, where they can pay for things that we don't necessarily have to pay for, and it's that trade-offs of what we can do. We can provide resources, they can provide finances, but it's a question of sitting together and say, this is what our plan is, how do you come to the party, instead of saying, this is the plan, what can you do? But consulting as the plan starts from the ground level, and I think that is what we are emphasizing. It's not to only call them once we have a plan and say, what are you going to do for us to achieve the plan, but collectively develop the plan and work together to achieve a common goal. I don't know, should I go on, TC? Or?
Because of time, I think we'll have to start.
Okay.
Let me respond to some of the issues and then the rest. I'm hoping to,
excuse me, we'll be able to get some time. But those are things here which I think I have to try to respond to them. Firstly, the way issues raised here around reports of health, I'm sure we'll be able to provide that, if that's very important. Not because I'm from Witbank, but the point of raised is of critical importance, and I think it gives the government a very bad place. I'm from Witbank, I know what you're talking about. People are simply saying, don't go to that hospital to die. That's a perception. So what my suggestion is that, as a matter of agency, the portfolio committee on health, both provincially and nationally, should go there for a strict audit about the money that is being sent there, what exactly is happening. That is very, very critical. Because part of the thing is this, that now, among other reasons, not the only one, this question of, you know, of giving a tender, we have to be clear that we give a tender to person who has got the skill and who is able to deliver. That is very, very critical. Well, some of the people are given tenders for this linen, you know. Who actually is cleaning them? Do they get them in time, etc.? That's very, very critical. So as a matter of agency, I think the portfolio committee has got
having a constitutional override possibility, they must go and get facts so that there is evidence, there's an urgent intervention. Because health is not just something, it is a human right. It is part of the social economic right in terms of chapter 2. And this is just feasible right. They deserve this very basic. And we cannot allow our people with a democracy to be subject to that. Veterans, DG, etc. Again, the role of the portfolio committee to find out why we're giving you information. Why do you do with information? To ensure that these departments are actually accountable. Right sizing, I fully agree with you. Right sizing, as I've pointed out, is about how do we, what is value for money rather than numbers. And we cannot simply just some sack that 50% of the people must be shut down. There must be a way of determining the number of people, what is necessary, etc., etc., rather than simply just talking of numbers. And you're quite correct. Normal attrition is not the solution. Because now, what say now, many financial managers, you know, they die, they pass on. I will not retrieve them. Efficient one, people with the scarce skills. If now they pass on, I will not want to free them because we want to cut down. So it doesn't make sense. What is important is that there must be a research, and we must know that now people who are there are actually giving value, and cannot be a blanket approach because we've got departments which are labor intensive, like your police, like your nurses, like education. I'm from the education sector. I know, as a matter of fact, that our classes up to this date in democracy would have a class of 70 people in one class because there are no teachers. In terms of our population, 50 plus something, you cannot say we're not going to employ what policemen when you look at the ratio. So we need to be very, very careful with the question of that. And then, Honorable Chairperson, you've raised very, very critical issues which are very close to my heart, and I want to respond as follows. Firstly, regarding our quota report as a PSC, we'll gladly give it to you. And I want to suggest that we need to change the format so that it's much user-friendly and should enable Parliament to exercise its overall function. Why? It is not enough to say for this quota, these were our targets. The demand must show that these targets have been achieved. Are they related to your strategic plan? Is there an alignment? And if they're aligned with the strategic plan for that department, then is that strategic plan aligned with the NDP? There must be that kind of information. Well, the point of this is that we may have what you call, you know, you just comply, but at the same time we don't get outcomes. We can only get outcomes, effective outcomes, you know, meaningful results, when actually what we set down to achieve in the plan actually cascades throughout the performance. So we will gladly do that. And then secondly, you raised the issue of the medium-term strategic framework versus the NDP. How are they linked? Now, that is very, very important. We have got Vision 28 NDP. But as you go along there, there will be some detour. Because in our way, a plan, you must have a detour, but you must not lose sight of where we're getting to. You see, when you're constructing a road, sometimes there are problems there. When you make a detour, you're trying to manage what's there, the mountain or whatever, but you must still go back to where we're getting to. We've experienced socio-economic problems in the last 2 years, you know. Our economy is not growing. It's below 1%. And there are a lot of corruption issues and other challenges. Health now must intervene through what the stimulus was called. But this is a short-term intervention. It should not sidetrack what our long-term goal. So what is happening? There are systems. What is important is that now, the medium-term strategic framework is there. What must happen? There is a provision. Departments that have to intervene, they can make an amendment in their what? In the strategic plan, that is allowed, as long as they will account. 4431. And when they make that amendment in their plan, it must also be reflected in the annual performance plan. And then they go on. Because now, the medium-term strategic framework will come to an end after next year, 2020. Currently, they're busy working the new framework, which will come up 2020 to 2025. So when that time comes, then once again, go back to what? Where we are getting to. And then you also made a very, very important point. Government last 5 years.
I really would like you to wrap up.
Okay. Perhaps, you know, I've exceeded my time. I'll stop it. I don't want to.
Okay. I really would like you to, if you still have any questions, submit those to the secretariat so that they can forward to the public service commission or their meeting informed. But also, I really would like to thank all of you for your participation. It has been an interesting engagement. We are just let down by the time. But then I'm happy with the arrangement that we get. But also to really the honourable of here on the brief. The brief was analysed within the context of your mandate. You can't take them out of their mandate. You must analyse this within the context of their mandate. So that's my thing. But thank you very much, and the meeting stands adjourned.
Okay.
Thank you.